Blog Talk Radio.
Do you want to hear the truth about New York State and beyond? I'm Diana.
And I'm Dean.
Join us Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll talk about everything New York State and beyond.
Yeah, nationwide news and local news and the tyranny that's going on here in New York State and what the Democrats are doing across the country, too.
We're going to talk about just about everything. Join us Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, D&D delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. See you then. Unless it's the polio or the monkeypox.
Right, right.
Yeah, she's still in, but she did lift her state of emergency. How interesting. At the very same week that they came out and said that ivermectin was 93% effective in treating COVID.
Yeah.
Even more, they said it, even more than the shot. So there's going to be a lot of ticked off people.
Right, especially the ones
if they make it around that long. Yeah.
Especially the ones that died or the families, you know, in all series of the ones that died.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's shown that for 6 weeks after you take the jab, your immune system goes down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you've got autoimmune disease.
Yep. So, you know, it's, I don't know. I really don't know with the whole jab thing. But I think people are starting to, you know, I mean, they're coming out and the CDC is, you know, admitting the myocarditis risks. And there's just a whole bunch of stuff with this vaccine that's starting to be revealed. But people are still going to do their boosters. I was listening to two guys at the gym yesterday, and they're talking about their boosters, right, how they're going to go. And I'm getting my booster. You just can't be too safe. I'm going to get my flu shot at the same time. And I'm thinking, I really want to say something, but these are the type where they're just too far gone. Too far gone. So, yeah. So, what are you doing over there? What are you doing?
I'm talking to my guest's assistant. Because the senator called in and they said the show wasn't on until 9. We had a little bit of technical difficulties here tonight. So,
Well, yeah, for about 3 minutes. For some reason, our show wasn't showing up, and now we're here. So, hopefully, he's going to be able to ring back in.
Yeah.
But either way.
I wonder if...
So they came out with this electric car. You know, we're on this whole electric car gig here. They came out today and said that. Just a reminder as we head into colder weather. According to a new study by Consumer Reports, your electric vehicle might lose 25% and even over 40% of its range during winter. So here we are pushing the whole Green New Deal with these electric cars, and people are going to have to worry about their battery dying up to 40% while they're using it in the wintertime. Not to mention that, I mean, California, you're not allowed to charge your cars at certain times of the day. I mean, this thing is just heading south really fast with this whole electric car thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, they're telling people in California, don't charge your car because they're having the rolling blackouts. And, you know, everybody knows that our grid couldn't handle it.
Can you imagine with New York winters? Or anywhere that has a hardcore winter, losing 40% of your battery?
Oh, yeah.
So what are you going to be? You're going to be stranded on a throughway somewhere, and you're going to have no, and then you can't charge it anywhere?
Right, or even if you get towed by a diesel fuel tow truck to a charging station, you know, you're going to have to sit around for quite a while waiting for it to charge.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
No. Yes.
So, where are we here? What do we got
okay.
today? We talked about her lifting the state of the emergency, except for polio and monkeypox. You know she's going to go back to it if and when. And I say if and when very loosely.
Mm-hmm.
She gets reelected.
Right.
And we're talking about Hochul Jochul here.
Yeah, Smiley, as I call her.
Right.
So,
you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about the chemtrails for a second. There was a guy in central New York that came out to the news, and I'm surprised that the news even did this interview, talking about the dangers. He wanted to know what was in these chemtrails. And he placed water out, and he took it to a lab, and he tested the chemtrails.
Oh, did he?
And it came back with extremely high, well, there were several heavy metals in it. I don't remember the exact ones, but I know that they're spraying aluminum in there. But they came back and they said that the barium levels were really, really high.
Oh, you've been talking about that for years, that they were hitting us with barium in the chemtrails.
Mm.
So I wonder if this is him because of maybe the phone that he's calling on.
Yeah, it could be. You want to try and see?
Well, you know, there's a couple other things. You know, we talk a lot about the vaccine. I've got an Epic TV headline here. The government is creating a luciferous mark to track the vaccination. Now, luciferin luciferase is firefly juice. It's the stuff that makes the fireflies, their light turn on and off and on and off.
Mm.
So, you know, but Lucifer, you know, is, you know, not a good guy.
Yeah.
So, I guess they're going to be putting some of this in there. Now, once you harvest the luciferase, you can put it under certain lights and see, you know, and it'll light up. When it's under the light, you can see it. I remember that from my old chemistry days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I'm guessing that they've already put this stuff in the vaccines, you know, and when they ramp up this 5G, we're going to be in some big trouble.
Okay, I think this is him right here.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, I think it might be him.
Okay, well, we can.
Okay, let me try activating him and see what happens.
All right.
Okay. Senator, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Oh,
yes,
God,
I can. Okay, Rob, hey, my good friend, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Hi, okay. Thanks for calling in. That's weird. You know, your phone number didn't come up. It came up as a spam call, so that's why we're wondering, you know, a little leery to pick that up.
Yeah, it's all good. We took a chance because it's showing up as 111-111-1111. And last I knew, you weren't a lawyer doing personal injury or anything like that, right?
No, I'm not even a lawyer doing anything. So, no, that's not my phone number, but This is me, and good to be with both of you guys tonight.
Yeah. So we have Senator Rod Ort with us, and I would like for you, just for a brief introduction, who you are and where you represent, just for our listeners, because we have listeners all over the world. So I just want to have you kind of recap who you are and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure.
And you could plug your website, page, and how to donate to you. You're allowed to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. No, I appreciate that. And yeah. So you know, Senator Rob Ort, have gotten to know Diana and Dean over the past couple years, and I've been a New York State Senator since 2015. I was elected in 14. Previously, I was the mayor of the city of North Tonawanda, my hometown, for 5 years. And before that, I was a financial advisor, and I served, of course, I served in the United States Army and the New York Army National Guard, and served in Afghanistan in 2008. When I came home, ran for mayor, got married, and then a couple of years later ran for the New York State Senate, something which I never intended to do. And but, you know, that's life takes you on some crazy turns and twists. And I have been in the Senate since then. And then in 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, I became the Senate Republican leader. So I am the Senate Minority Leader. At this particular moment in time, our conference, of course, is in the minority in the Senate. So I'm the minority leader, and in that role, I am responsible for representing our conference, representing the Republican conference in the Senate, representing our positions on various issues, and also in an election year like we're in, I am very involved in trying to grow our conference and elect more conservative, proud American New York State senators to the state Senate, not only to grow our conference, but really at this moment in time, I think it really is to save our state. Our state, for those who are not listening, who are not in New York, is on a trajectory of both fiscal and moral ruin if we stay on this path. And we are way out of balance. The state is completely governed, as you guys know, under one party, far left Democratic rule. Not, no matter what anybody says, there's no moderation to this Democratic majority. It is a New York City, AOC-influenced socialist party that is running New York State. And you want to look at all the policies, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, but that's, the stakes couldn't be higher for Lee Zeldin from a governor's race, and it couldn't be higher for our candidates from Long Island all the way to Western New York and everywhere in between. The stakes really are that high. We are trying to save the state, bring some balance back to the state, and to all the people who have no voice and who have had no voice, at least governmentally, for the past couple of years. So you can go to www.robort.com. You can go to at Senator Ort is my Twitter handle, and robort.com is where you can learn more about me. You could donate and certainly give some more information about my background. But good to be with both you guys, and look forward to talking about the various issues that are facing both the state and the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and thank you for your service. I don't know if I ever mentioned to you that my father was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, and my grandfather, who served in World War II and Korean, he's buried in Arlington, and he was a major in the Army.
Well, and Rob, it's
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's September 15th, and I think September 11th is a significant date in your life. Could you tell us a little bit of what happened?
Sure. Well, I know why, you and I, think have talked about this, and so I know why you asked that. I would certainly not claim that that's only a particular important date to me. I'm sure to a lot of Americans that was a, certainly a tragic day, a day that most people who are alive will never forget. I'm sure both of you remember exactly where you were on that day, that morning when the planes hit the towers and the attacks began on our country. For me, you know, I was 22 years old, right out of college, Canisius College in Buffalo, and that was the day that I always said that was the day that my like adult life really began. I was out of college, you know, wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do, like a lot of college graduates, and September 11th happened, and a month later, I was signing on the dotted line, so to speak, to join the United States Army. And so, you know, it was one of those moments for me that just, I knew exactly what I had to do. I knew what I was supposed to do. And I knew that if I didn't do it, and I really mean this, if I didn't join in some way, I mean, I sent emails to the Marine Corps, the Air Force, and the Army, and the Army responded first. So I joined the Army. There was no like magical part about it. I was going to join whoever responded first. And I'm sure they were all inundated with emails of people wanting to join. But I just remember that feeling of helplessness watching those attacks and wanting to do something about it. And I was fortunate that I was able to. You know, I was a young man, wasn't married, wasn't in a relationship. You know, I was living at home with my mom and dad. And, you know, my country needed me. And I was very happy and proud to be able to serve during that period of time. And so, and I truly look at my current political service as an extension of my military service. You know, I'm still fighting for the same country that I was fighting for then. You know, the Constitution talks about, you know, fighting against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I'm more on the domestic front, obviously, now. But I still believe that I am fighting for the same country that the oath I took when I joined the military is the same oath, even though I'm not wearing that uniform anymore, just in a different capacity for me. So, but yeah, that just coming past the 21st anniversary, and I was speaking at an event in Brockport, which is in Monroe County, of course, which is the eastern edge of my current Senate district. And it just strikes me every year that goes by that you have a whole generation now, people who are in their late teens or even early 20s that have no recollection because they weren't here on September 11th. Like they, you know, I can remember it like it happened yesterday. If you asked me what I did 21 days ago, I couldn't tell you, but I could tell you exactly what I did 21 years ago. You know, it's just one of those things. And I know that's the price we all pay of getting older, I suppose. But no, it's a significant day for a lot of us and certainly for me, but thank you for mentioning that.
You know, the way I feel about it, September 11th, and I've said this before, you know, I'm a little older than Diana, a lot older than you, I think. And, you know, so I lived through the strife of the 60s, which, you know, what was going on in the inner cities was not too much different than what was going on 2 years ago with
sure.
BLM and FIFA. And, you know, September 11th, I saw our country come together like I'd never seen it come together in my lifetime. I think September 11th for our generations was like Pearl Harbor Day for the greatest generation. And, you know, so for 7 years, our country, it didn't matter if you were Republican, Democrat, black, white, yellow, brown, nothing. We were Americans first and everything else second. Until Barack Hussein Obama, and you know, they've been trying to split the country up ever since.
It's funny you mention that, or I should say funny, but it's important that you mention that because that was exactly what I literally gave that talk in Brockport on 9/11. I said, you know, the legacy that and it's funny how with time, you know, with a lot of events in life, I suppose. It's funny how you remember something, you know, a year after, 2 years. And then as the years go on, you remember it, like there's different things that stand out, right? There's like, you know, maybe the legacy of 9/11 isn't what you thought it was going to be on the fifth anniversary. When you look at, and 21 years later, what you just mentioned, that's what I remember. Obviously, you remember the attacks and the horrible part of it, right? The firemen and the cops rushing in. But I remember we were as unified as you could possibly be. People were American flags. They couldn't keep them on the shelves. They were flying. People, everybody right. wanted to wave the flag, fly it from their house, fly it from their car. I mean, I remember the Flyers. There was a hockey game between the Flyers and the Rangers. And President Bush was giving, it wasn't the State of the Union, but it was like an emergency State of the Union, a joint address in response to the attacks. They stopped the hockey game, and the fans and the players watched the president give the address on the jumbotron, like on the screen that you would normally see, that you know, look at the score. They were all watching it, and USA chants broke out in the middle of the game, and they never finished the game. They literally never finished after the speech. I mean, it's almost, and I said that to go back to that generation of kids. You know, right now there's a 20-year-old kid, a young man or woman, that only knows the country being divided. They think that's their whole life, the country, right? All they know is that, you know, it's black versus white, it's Democrat, it's left versus right, it's, you know, people who love them, who are, you know, patriotic versus people who aren't, or vice versa. And mm-hmm. I just want them to know that it wasn't always that way. And there was a moment, there was a period of time when it really wasn't that way, when we were really united against people who really wanted to kill us and who did kill people on that day for no reason, by the way, than they were Americans and they were working in America, right? And, you know, I just think that's, you know, today, even though we killed bin Laden and even though we took out a ton of Al-Qaeda terrorists and killed a lot of bad people, no question, who wanted to harm America, I just can't help but think, you know, there's got to be those terrorists who did that and the people who celebrated it. I got to wonder that if they feel like, hey, we – you know, America's divided. America's not, you know, could we, if there was an attack like that today, would we be able to come together in the same way? I don't know the answer. I'd like to think we could. I just don't know for sure. And that bothers me.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we wouldn't have to find that out. And I loved what you said about, you know, this generation not knowing. I was literally thinking the same exact thing. On Sunday, I was at Russell Salvatore's 9/11 memorial, and Ed Rath was there, nice enough to be there. Nick Langworthy was there. And I'm a Western New York pinup girl for a cause, right? So we dress up in 40s and 50s, and, you know,
oh,
and it's
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of them?
I have.
Yeah, in fact, they'll be on our show in a couple of weeks. But, yeah, I just joined on with them, and I'm doing this. And you know, I love it because it's nothing political, which is kind of cool. It's kind of a break from that. But, you know, to see the faces of these veterans when they see us dressed up like that, it brings them back to a time that, you know, none of us even remember, you know, but they do.
Right.
And I was
right.
I was thinking the same exact thing. I was like, wow, these younger kids, they have no idea. They don't. They have no idea.
No, but I think it's so. I look at that as a challenge, right? That's a challenge for me, and it's a challenge for all of us who were there to remind people and this new generation to remind them what it was like that day. To remind them that, you know, the country did rally. And it was important, by the way. It wasn't just a nice thing like, oh, we came together. We had to come together because we were at war. And,
right.
And when you're at war, you know, you guys know, when you're fighting a war, there's no option. Either you're united in support of your country or you're in trouble, right? You can't fight a war when you're all divided. We saw that with Vietnam, Dean, to your point earlier about the 60s. you know, the country was so divided in the 60s that when you look at Vietnam, it's unfortunate because of what those veterans dealt with when they come home. But in some ways, it's like, yeah, of course it turned into what it did, because the country was so divided that trying to fight a war in the middle of that civil strife is just very difficult. And so, you know, it was so important we came together, but we did. We came together, and I remember when, you know, to sort of shift to, like, modern-day politics, I can remember, and I forget who it was. It was a Democratic elected official from down in the city. A young, I think it might have been AOC. It may have been her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, she, you know, because she's one of these, she's kind of the generation we're talking about, right? She's like 30 years old or 31 years old, right? So she would have been 10, right, when 9/11 occurred. She'd have been 10 years old, which is old enough to remember, but not necessarily old enough to really appreciate maybe what was really going on. And she made the comment, and if it wasn't her, it was another city Democrat, a younger city Democrat, who said, what are we even doing in Afghanistan? Like, why are we still there? This is a couple of years ago when we were still there, before the shameful retreat and abdication that we saw last summer. She said, why are we there? And it bothered me at first, but then I also remembered, this is important. It's important for people like us and me to remind young people exactly why we were there initially. Like, we were there because that country gave sanctuary to people who killed 3,000 people in America because they were Americans. You know, I mean, like, our country's reputation, to me, I firmly believe this, and I don't think we should have been there, and I'm glad we're not there today, although I didn't like how it ended. But I thought, absolutely, if we didn't go in there and go after bin Laden, go after Al-Qaeda, then there'd have been more attacks on the United States. There would have been absolutely more attacks, because people would have thought, you know what, you can kill Americans, you can, you know, do something on American soil, and they're not going to do a thing about it. And just look at today. Look at today with President Biden, and you look at what's going on in the world with Russia, and you look at what's going on with China and the aggression they're showing to Taiwan, and you look at what's going – when America is perceived as weak, fact of the matter is the world is a more dangerous place. It just really is. And, you know, so that's – but anyways, I know I'm kind of getting – a little afield there, but that's just my own thought.
So I want to talk some more about those points. We have to go to a commercial. Are you okay to hang on?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. We'll be back in 4 minutes, guys. Hang tight.
Hello. My name is Christy Rose, and I'm the co-host of Mental Acumen here on Freedomizer Radio. I was trained as a health coach at the world's largest nutrition school, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I want to support you on your journey to a healthy mind-body connection. I believe the healthcare system is broken, and we need to play an active role in improving our health. We need to take a proactive approach to wellness. If you've struggled to lose weight or to maintain your weight, please consider reaching out to me, because I was trained to look at people as individuals and to address the whole body and mind at once. Our bodies are more intelligent than our minds, and they try to scream for help in ways such as depression, acne, and fatigue. I can help you using natural holistic methods to get to the root issues and decrease or eliminate symptoms. I offer a free initial health history consultation, so please visit my website for more information or to schedule an appointment at coachchristie.com. That's coachchristie.com.
Hey, kids, you hate ginger?
Yeah!
Then get the brand new androgynous action person, G.I. Pack!
Cool!
G.I. Pack gets rid of all the fun and excitement of G.I. Joes and replaces it with self-righteousness and anger!
This dino won't tell me his pronouns! Take a risk, Nazi!
G.I. Pack comes with awesome accessories, like a commuter bike, a sword latte, and a cell phone with instant outrage self-reaction.
Pro-life people should die!
Awesome!
But look out! Here comes G.I. Pat's greatest bow!
Marriage is between a man and a woman.
Mike Pence!
Mike Pence and the evil right-wingers will stop at nothing to destroy G.I. Pat, and it's up to you to fight back!
I won't share a meal with another woman unless someone else is present.
Right side of history! I'm dead.
Now you know your gender identity, and knowing is half the battle. Get your life back today!
Ay, 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 le chupacabra, por qué?
Are you tired of losing your herd of goats to the chupacabra? Are you worried about how you're going to eat because your goats were viciously ravaged? Call SNL Chupacabra Insurance today. SNL provides fast, speedy claims in the event of your goat farm being destroyed. Low rates, fast service, and professional attitude is what makes SNL your choice for Chupacabra Insurance. Call 855-CHUPA-NO today. 855-CHUPA-NO for a free rate quote. SNL Chupacabra Insurance. Just in case the Chupacabra comes.
Ay, ay, ay. Le Chupacabra.
Okay, we are back.
That was a quick 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, Senator, you're still there?
I am.
Okay, good, good. You know, something that came to mind when we were talking before was one of my great fears. I was a chemical engineer working in industry, you know, consulting with all of these factories all over the Northeast. And one of my biggest fears was if there's ever a world war again, we don't have any manufacturing in this country where we could support a war machine like we did. And, you know, even in Vietnam or even the first Gulf War, everything's coming from abroad. And that's fearful to me.
Yeah, no, it should be fearful to everybody. And not only is it coming from abroad, in a lot of cases, it's coming from a country or countries who may not be our allies in such a conflict, right? So when you talk about China, that very likely could be, if not a country we are engaged in conflict, and I hope we're not, but it's certainly a country that's not friendly to the United States from a national security perspective, right? So, and I think we saw this even in the pandemic. You know, all of a sudden, when we needed masks, when we needed medical, you know, equipment and supplies, we couldn't get it. And we couldn't get it because it's all made in China. And, you know, the whole world was dealing with the COVID outbreak. So guess where China's focus is going to be? Not on helping us. It's going to be on taking care of themselves. And that was a perfect reminder that we should care where certain things are made. But the country should you know, there's different ways. I think we have to look at national security differently in the 21st century than maybe in the 20th century. So to your point, Dean, yes, I think we should manufacture more in the United States for a lot of reasons. One of them is economic, but the other one is national security. But I also think we need to look at, you know, the future battlefields are going to be different. It could be bio warfare. It could be chemical warfare. It's going to be cyber warfare. And so we need to be making sure that our economy is reflective of the national security interests of the United States. In other words, I'm a free enterprise guy. Certainly, I support people being able to make money and companies. But we have to make sure that American companies that are employing American workers that are founded in the United States, they, at the end of the day, they need to be making, you know, we need to be making sure that they're doing things that are still at least helpful to the United States. You see other countries do this, you know, and former President Trump talked. This was a big platform of his actually when he ran. That the idea was American companies should be backing up America and not doing things that are actually hurtful to America or actually helping enemies of the United States. And I think to your point about manufacturing and making certain things, here in the United States, we should be doing that. And I think we get reminders of that all the time.
Yeah, it's something we should have never stopped doing in the first place. We just became too reliable sources, but our own.
You know, Diana and I, earlier we were up in Niagara Falls for a ribbon cutting with congressional candidate Steve Sams, and Mayor Rustano from Niagara Falls was there. And, you know, I came to Western New York to work for Occidental Chemical. At the time, there were about 3,000 people. I heard they're down to 200 or 300. And I learned that day that by the end of December, they're shut down. They're totally gone. The DuPont plant doesn't exist anymore. Olin didn't look like they're running. All this industry that we used to have around here, the refineries, the steel mills. When I first moved up here, I did a little bit of quick math, and I think in the 80s we lost a quarter of a million manufacturing jobs the Buffalo area. You know, I wasn't even looking at all of Western New York. And this kind of leads into one of your old bills. You know, Diana and I are the Western New York area co-leaders for Divide New York, and that was one of your bills. And one of the big advantages to dividing is we get rid of a lot of these laws that the communists and socialists are passing to stifle industry, stifle the family farms, stifle living here in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us your take on that, since you were the sponsor of the bill?
So there's a few things we can unpack there. I think one, you know, when you talk about the DuPont plant in Occidental, obviously that hits home to me because that is in my district specifically. Of course, Niagara Falls for a long time, that was you know, they were home to all those places, all those big, you know, heavy industry. And look, there's a lot of things that have occurred, a lot of forces there that we can talk about as to why some of those jobs not only left Western New York, but left the United States in general, right, and went other places. But I think a lot of what DuPont and Occidental, the recent decision there, a lot of those issues, you don't have to look very far. You can look at Albany. The state of New York has made it really unattractive for these companies to do business here. And recently they've, you know, there's obviously taxes, high cost of labor, over-regulation, all those things. But they've dealt with that for a long time, these companies, even back to when you worked there, Dean. I'm sure that was still going. It was never cheap to do business in New York State, or at least not many years. But I think when you look at the recent environmental, you know, New York State's pursuing its own version of the Green New Deal, which a lot of people don't realize. The state of New York and the Democrats in New York are pushing legislation, the CLCPA, the Climate Community Investment Act. They're banning even those, you know, plastic, like the styrofoam peanuts that come in like a shipping package. You know, you get – we're doing a lot of things. Well, guess what? For a lot of these companies, it's only getting banned in New York. So for these global companies and national companies, with all the other disadvantages of doing business in New York, it's very easy for them. Oh, and by the way, the high cost of energy. You know, they get a little bit of a break because of the New York Power Project, right? The Robert Moses hydroelectric plant there. They get a little bit of a break, but it's still expensive to do business in New York, and then you have this added environmentally driven leftist energy policy and climate policy where companies like this are targeted specifically, and it's no wonder that they say, you know what, we're going to close this plant, 300 people, 200 people, we're going to close it down, and we're just going to shift these operations to another facility in a different state or maybe in a different country. And so, you know, to our point earlier, you'll hear Democratic politicians and sometimes, you know, Republicans who vote for this stuff, you'll hear them talk about, you know, we got to keep manufacturing, we got to keep good-paying union jobs in America. And I support that, by the way. The problem is, at the same time they say that, they pass policies like this that do the exact opposite. It drives those very jobs that they pander to, the workers, and it drives those very jobs out of the state and in some cases out of the country. And so, you know, words are nice, but actions speak louder than words. And I think for a lot of people, if you look at the policies that the Democratic elected officials these days are passing, certainly in New York, they are job killers. They are going to make America weaker at all the things that we just said it has to get stronger in.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Since I was a chemical engineer by education, spent the first half of my life working in the factories, really doing consulting work. I wasn't, turning valves or anything. You know, it's really sad for me to see all these mothballed plants and just, the fenced-in lots and all that. It's just sad where we used to make all this stuff, and now we don't make anything. Just we make taxes. Talking about taxes.
Yeah, right. We certainly make a lot of taxes. That's for sure.
Yep. I'm a kind of a weirdo. I've been in the same house for 33. I've been in the same house for 33 years. Okay, and my taxes have gone up 364%. I just paid my school taxes yesterday, and I had them stamp it under protest. It was a 5.6% increase. Okay, and they're like, oh, it's only for the kids. It's only 5.6%. It's only a couple dollars. Well, it's only every single year, and I'm getting sick and tired of the onlys. 5.6% a year for 10 years, that's 56%. That's unconscionable. And our enrollment hasn't gone up. So what are they doing with all this money?
They're certainly not spending it on things that you and I would want them to. I want to be clear too. When I got to the Senate in 2015, Republicans controlled the Senate by a vote. It was never a broad majority. It was really a very defensive majority, right? Kind of clinging to this one third of the state government. But in my 4 years in the majority, and certainly preceding me, even many Republicans were culpable in sort of the out of control growth of the state government. So to put it in perspective, the state of New York, the budget, our state budget this year, that was just passed in the spring, was $220 billion. That's the state budget of the state of New York. 2 years ago, it was $192 billion. So in the last 2 years, it's gone up $30 billion. Or just very close to it. And consider this, that the budget is larger than the state of Texas and Florida combined. So if you combine the budgets of Texas and Florida, two states that are larger than New York as far as population goes, both those states have more people. In fact, both those states pretty soon are going to have more New Yorkers than we do. But both those states have more population than the state of New York, and yet their budgets are smaller. And so I always ask the question, do people think that is New York State that much better run? Or do we get that much more, right? Are we getting that much more for living in New York? And of course the answer is no, because if we were,
right,
people wouldn't be leaving New York. They'd be right? I mean, so it's really we passed a property tax cap several years ago. However, school districts and localities can override it. In some cases, it sounds like in your case, Dean, they did. And a lot of times in school board, school board elections are one of those things. A lot of people don't vote in their school board election, right? I know a lot of people that do not vote in their school board election. And it's ironic because in Western New York, anyways, I would be willing to bet that whatever you pay in taxes, whether it's $5,000 or $20,000, half of that tax bill is your school tax. For most people,
that,
whatever they pay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
In the town that I live, it's two-thirds is school and one-third is, you know, everything else. The town, the fire department.
So, I mean, like, so you think about that, and yet people couldn't tell you who's on their school board. You know, they've never voted in a school board election, and yet these boards. So who's coming out? The question is, who's coming out? Well, who's coming out is the teachers' union, the teachers who obviously have a vested interest in voting. And, you know, I guess some parents or, you know, if they want a new football stadium. And that's all fine. It's America. You can come out and vote, and you should. But I just feel like there's a lot of people who don't vote. And if they did, you might get some different results on those school board elections. And those school boards, you know, they are overseeing huge budgets. These schools, the local districts, have huge budgets. I mean, as far as, you know, way more than usually the town or the city or the village. And so, but no, New York State is a very high tax state. We all know that. My friends across the aisle, they view that as we're able to do more. The more we're, you know, they see us tax number one in the country, they think that's a good thing. Like, that means we're doing more for people. And I just sort of shake my head because we're not doing more. We're actually probably doing less. We're doing more harm because we're strangling businesses. We're forcing businesses out. We're forcing people to leave. And the proof is in the pudding. And so, your point, Dean, about the taxes, I think that's going to be – I think New Yorkers are getting to their breaking point, and I think you're going to see that this November.
I think so, too. And you definitely – they can't even remotely say that we're getting more by paying more taxes. We were recently in Utah. We were in Salt Lake City, and the average house there, a $500,000 house, the taxes are like $1,000 a year, literally $1,000 a year.
Yep.
And their roads – are perfect. No potholes. There's no litter anywhere. The city is maintained. So I would never want anybody to buy that bull crap right now, what you just said about us paying more taxes and you're getting more. The only thing we're getting more out of the school systems is more indoctrination, as far as I'm concerned, for those taxes. So.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, at the school taxes, I mean, that's its own animal unto itself. You know, New York State, I think, spends about – if I'm not mistaken, about, it's like $25,000 per student. That's
right.
What we pay. Now, you could send a kid to Nichols for $25,000, and in many cases, you're not getting that education in New York State, you know, certainly in the public school system. We have a public education system in New York that to me is broken in a lot of ways. And that it only serves to sort of feed itself, right? It's no longer about a quality education. It's about something different. And, you know, whether it's an agenda or whatever, it's sort of about feeding the beast. You also have another issue on the education front, which is going on. And I think parents are starting to wake up on this front. You know, I think that was one thing that came out of the pandemic is a lot of parents became much more aware of what their kids were learning, what they weren't learning, what was in the curriculum, how, you know, and I do think that could be, I hope, a positive, that more parental engagement, because that's the problem, right? Right now, you know, schools, you know, when we talk about education, I think you, Diana, Dean, we think about when we went to school. So we think, well, why is it more expensive? So much more expensive because it's, you know, it's math. It's English, it's history, it's all the same stuff we learned. I mean, not the same stuff. Obviously, there's some new stuff in there, but it's the same. But it's really not. Today, we are asking schools, in some cases, to basically act as like a substitute for the family, because we've had a breakdown of the family in a lot of places, and so you know we're feeding kids breakfast, we're feeding kids lunch. And mark my words, dinner's coming if it's not already there in some of these school districts. And so I always tell people that's why, you know, why it's getting so much more. Because schools are effectively replace. Some of these schools are replacing the family unit as like a full caregiver. It's no longer just about teaching them arithmetic. They're, you know, and in my view, the government, which is what public education is. I mean, it's right. It's the state. That's a poor substitute and a dangerous substitute for a mom and dad or a grandma and a grandfather. And I think that's why it's so much more expensive, but it's also you're getting less for it. The family raising a kid, you're going to get a better kid, and it costs less. So we're basically, with the breakdown of the family, we're spending way more on education, but we're actually getting a worse product. And I think American parents, hopefully, with the pandemic, are waking up to that reality and maybe taking their families and their kids back from the education bureaucracy.
Yeah, and I can't even tell you how many parents I have instructed since 2019. My daughter was the result of when they eliminated the religious exemption back in 2019. I know you're familiar with this.
Yep.
Where they booted out 26,000 families, and they gave us a choice that we either homeschool, vaccinate, or move. You know, and a lot of people chose to move. A lot of people chose to vaccinate, sadly.
Sure.
And, you know, I chose to homeschool. And,
yep.
You know, it has not been an easy thing, but I kept telling them, I'm telling you, something's coming. You're going to have to make that decision, too, whether it be they pass the COVID vaccine for the kids to attend school. You know, who knows what it's going to be. But it'll be something, and there's more homeschoolers in New York State now than there have ever been. You know, we kind of worry
there
about
are.
That. What are you going to do with us? You
no,
know?
There's been a huge growth in homeschooling, and I worry about it too, because I worry that New York State is going to start to target families and parents who are homeschooling, because you just saw what happened with the ruling the other day, where, you know, private schools, religious schools. I was down in with the Orthodox Jewish community in Rockland County. Their hair is on fire. Because these institutions, these schools, which have a faith component, I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, so I went to a school where my parents felt that was an important component to them. In other words, they wanted me to have that faith component as part of my education. I always tell people, you know, math and science tells you what you can do. Religion or that faith component tells you if you should do it, right? It's one thing, Dean, you were in a chemical, you know, no doubt a scientific field. There's a lot of things you could do. That didn't mean always you should do them, right? Because that's where morality comes into play. And I think more and more young people having that in their education is not a bad thing. I think most parents would agree, especially today with all the, you know, the temptations out there for young people. But New York State has shown under this left wing control, they have shown a disdain for parental involvement. They have shown a disdain for religious, you know, any type of religion in any facet at all. And I can tell you that is a real thing. You know, I don't want to think that I'm just a holy roller. I grew up, my parents certainly, faith was a big part of our home. But the reality is, my colleagues across the aisle have a real disdain for any type of faith or religion at all. And so if you're homeschooling, you may be a target for New York State's government. If you're, you know, a religious school, you are going to be a target for New York State's government. And I do think it's important that parents and even educators who don't agree with that, we have to stand up and push back on this. I think this is going to be a big underlying issue at the polling place, you know, on election day this coming November. I don't know that it's getting as much attention as it was in the pandemic with all the mandates and that, but I think it is still, there are a number of parents that is going to be a major driving issue when they go to vote this November, and I hope it is, because I think we're on the right side of that issue.
Yeah,
yep.
I think it's a ticking time bomb. I really do. We talk about it all the time that they're going to come after the homeschoolers in some way, shape, or form. That, you know, the districts are just going to turn around and say, nope, we're not going to approve your, you know, we're not going to approve your education if you don't vaccinate your kid or you don't follow our curriculum or who knows what it's going to be.
Correct.
But I think the LA will have a lot to say.
You're
right,
Diana,
too bad.
And I think that is something we have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and it's too bad that the school board elections are not on the first Tuesday of November like the regular elections, because you'd have turnout. I mean, the town that I live in, we typically have, you know, 35 to 40% of the registered voters show up in November, and we have, like, less than 10% of the registered voters
Correct.
Show up in May. You know,
Correct.
They don't even
And I think I, there was a – and I apologize. I didn't know we were – there was a bill a couple years ago, and I thought it passed the Senate, that actually would change that. For, you know, for school districts. Now, it might have been only in like, big districts. Like, now I'm trying to remember if there were specific districts that were sort of carved out or whatever. But I thought, I know there's been a push to do exactly what you're saying, which is to move the elections so that you have more turnout. Because the truth is, you know, the election in May for school district, you know, listen, I do this. This is what I do. Right? I try to get people out to vote, whether it's for me or for other candidates. It's hard enough when it's November and everyone's thinking about voting. When you're talking about May or August or, you know, a special election, it is very hard to get people motivated and to get them out. And so I think you're right. If we can move the school board elections to where you have turnout, I think you would get different results. And I think you'd get better results.
Yep. And I think part of the problem with the pandemic was, for the first time in history, the parents could look, with the remote learning, they could look over the shoulders of the kids, because parents aren't allowed in the classrooms. You know, they're not allowed in the schools.
Right.
And so they saw what they were being indoctrinated with. I'm not going to call it teaching. It was indoctrination. And they were like, wait a minute here. You know? And then the other big problem that we've got is, you know, I'm the oldest kid in my family, and, you know, about a month or so after I was born, Mom quit her job and she stayed home and raised us kids. Well, now it takes two salaries to
Right.
live the lifestyle that, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, one salary would do it. So that's the other, you know, thing, is the, dissolving the family unit and depending more on, you know, the government and the school system and others to raise your kids is because of that.
Yeah. So we have enough that we have to get to, Senator. So we have to pay our sponsors. So we're going to go to commercial, but when we come back, we have some emails and questions that were sent in from some of our listeners. I want to specifically talk about the voting thing and the illegal immigrants. That's what their questions are about. If you're up for that, and if you're up for holding another 4 minutes, D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond, hang tight, guys. We'll be back in four.
First day night in months.
I know. It's nice to finally get out. I think we need to wear masks, or what's the protocol?
Well, I'm sure they'll let us know, honey.
All right. Table for two for Jenkins, please.
Ah, yes, I have you right here. This way, please. I'm sorry, we're closed. Please evacuate immediately.
Evacuate?
Are we in danger?
But of course, we're all in terrible danger, and we're all going to die. I'm sorry, false alarm. Table for two, did you say?
What's going on?
COVID restrictions. They change by the second these days. Isn't it wonderful?
No.
Keeping us safe, many erratic restrictions at a time.
Talk about,
Oh, there's one now. Masks on, please.
Oh, there's your answer.
When to...
Oh, you must have missed the fine print.
You gotta be kidding me. Caesar!
All right, we'll put them on.
Refund is Caesar.
Table for two, right this way. Oh, don't go near him.
Don't we need to social distance or something?
Don't be absurd. This isn't 2020. We have more sophisticated means of distancing.
This is humiliating.
Oh. All of this stuff is covered in COVID.
What? It's just soaked in it.
Do we have COVID now?
What do we do? What do we do? Is that what the CDC says to do? Water washes it off or something?
I just wanted you to calm down. Here are your menus. Today's special is the Chateaubriand with fingerling potatoes and hand sanitizer reduction.
But what about those masks and cones? You said they were soaked in COVID.
I'll give you a few moments to look over the menu.
What are we going to do? This is nuts.
Should we go? I want to leave.
I don't think he's going to let us. Jacqueline!
What did you just do to me?
I gave you the vaccine, of course. It's a chef's special. Little Pfizer, little Moderna, compliments of the house.
What is wrong with you, man? I got the vaccine. I'm vaccinated.
Yeah, me too. I'm vaccinated too. No need to get me.
Honey.
You can't treat people like this.
Actually, according to the CDC, yes, I can. Have you had a chance to look at the menu?
I haven't had a chance to yet.
New restrictions say you can't look directly at anything that could possibly contain COVID.
Like this? I can't read it. I'll take the salmon with it. Caesar!
Just give me a filet and a freaking eyewash station.
We need to leave and we need to leave now.
Oh, but I kind of wanted my salmon.
I'm fine!
All right, on your feet! You're coming with me! Let's go! Come on!
What is going on?
Oh, him? He was unvaccinated. It's time to eat. However, I was informed the latest guidance is you must wear a mask while eating.
What?
Not a gas mask this time.
No, how are we supposed to eat with a mask over our faces?
I'm sure you'll figure it out. Masks on. And another! And another triple mask, and another one, one more, yes, yes, more masks, another one, we're masking to the break of dawn, yes, mask, 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 and now, you may eat. Good, very good.
That does it! This is insanity! I'm eating like a normal person! Stop that!
I'm just following the science.
Praise be to Fauci.
Not at my table!
Let it go!
Hey! Let her go, man!
Kind of commercial that was, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Some of them are really, what? So anyway, do you mind if I take an email here that somebody sent me?
No,
it was actually a message. And she wants to know what you think of rank choice as far as Adams goes in New York City and letting the immigrants vote.
Oh. So like, there's just to be clear, so there those are two different things, which I'm happy to talk about both. So there's ranked choice voting. That
yep.
is in they tried that in New York City this time. It was really a kind of a disaster from the standpoint that you're asking a lot from the boards of election, which as we've seen, you know, these boards of elections sometimes aren't. They struggle with the normal, just counting the votes. And maybe that's incompetence, which I've certainly seen in government, or maybe it's intentional. But the bottom line is, the Democrats in New York specifically have thrown so many changes to election laws. And that's all designed, right? They're trying to change the rules to make it almost impossible for them to lose, particularly in Democratic areas. But they did this ranked choice voting. Now, that was in New York City only. I have no doubt that at some point they will try to push this statewide. But at this point, it's in New York. I don't know how effective it is. I'll leave it. So I've never done it, obviously. I've never participated in a ranked choice election. I get the concept, but I just don't know how effective it is because – you know, like in New York City, in the mayoral primary, you had 25 candidates. I don't know how it works, but conceivably, some people, you know, if we had a Republican primary or even if you're a Democrat, a lot of times, you know, like for president, you have like your first candidate and maybe you have a number two. But it's unlikely that you have a number three and a four. And like people don't think in those terms, right? People think, I like Rob Ort, that's who I'm supporting. I like Dean Maracas. I'm going to vote for him. They don't like go to – So I think it becomes, you know, to try to tabulate all the different, you know, your ranked choice and put all that together, I just don't know how effective it is. I think you get – it's a different model. Some people might like it, but I am suspicious of it myself as to the effectiveness of it. Now, as far as the illegals, New York City passed a law under de Blasio at the end of his administration to allow about 800,000 illegal immigrants the ability to vote in city elections. Thank God it went to court, and a court struck it down, as I pretty much was sure they would, because the U.S. Constitution is pretty clear that to vote in an election, whether it be for city council, dog catcher, or president, you have to be a U.S. citizen. But this is yet another attempt by Democrats. What they are trying to do, and I've said this for a long time, several years ago, they passed a law in New York State, you guys might remember, they gave driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. Now, why do they do that? They want to give them a government ID, because with a government ID, you can do a lot of things. Without one, you can't do a lot of things, right? Now, it wasn't just about driving. It was sort of hidden as a driving bill, a driver's license, but it's a government ID. They also allowed illegals to go to college, to get taxpayer-funded education in New York. They are pushing voting rights. They're pushing unemployment monies, right? Like they don't pay federal income taxes or state income taxes, but yet they want them to be able to get unemployment benefits. What they're basically trying to do with all this is they're trying to basically create de facto citizenship. So the state of New York cannot grant citizenship, nor can any state. Only the federal government can do that. But what the state of New York is trying to do, and the Democrats here are trying to do, is create de facto citizenship. We will make it so that you have every right and every other benefit that American citizens have, we're going to give to you in lieu of being able to actually call you citizens.
Yeah.
And that's really what this is all about. And that's the whole move behind that and those kinds of things. And thankfully, our judicial system struck that one down.
Well, thank God. And don't forget about the food stamps and $15,600 that each of them got, too.
That's right. Yep.
And then, why didn't they send some of that money my way?
Our way.
You know, and you being in the Senate, you know this, but I think the listeners need to hear it. Here in New York State, in my opinion, it's not just getting Lee Zeldin elected governor. Because if things in the Senate and the Assembly sit exactly the way they are now with the supermajorities, he could sign his fingers away with vetoes, and they could override the veto. So, in my opinion,
right.
Not only do we have to get the the governorship, but we need to at least get the Senate back. That's the one we've got a chance of getting. The Assembly, that's 2-1. We'll never get that back, you know. But I think the Senate, we've got a chance, and I'd love to be talking next year to Rob Worth, the majority leader.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Dean, and look, we're working very hard, and I mean that sincerely, and I say we because it isn't just certainly me by any stretch, but we are working, me, my staff, a lot of the members are working very hard to raise the resources needed for all these races, to make sure we had good candidates, to make sure that our messaging is on point, because you're right. We have a chance not only to get the majority back, but we, you know, with what happened with redistricting, we got a fair map. Now look, as Republicans in New York, all I can ask for is a fair chance, right? I'll never get a map that creates 40 Republican seats, but if I can get a fair map, which we got, with competitive seats, we can win those seats, and we have a path back to the majority. It's just like in the private sector, when there's competition between companies and businesses, the winner is the consumer. When there's competition amongst politicians, the winner is the voter. And that's what I think we got out of the redistricting process. We have a chance this cycle to make significant gains, and that gives us a chance in the next cycle and the cycle after to try to reclaim the majority, you know, if not this time. But you mentioned the supermajority. They have the supermajority by 2 seats. So if we win 2 seats, they lose the veto-proof majority, and a Governor Zeldin would have significantly more leverage to enact his agenda and protect New Yorkers from this far-left agenda. So that is sort of that's the floor. Obviously, we want to win more than 2 seats, and I think we're going to, but that's the floor that we have to get to, and I think we're going to do that. So that is some good news, I think, and a very reasonable goal for Republicans and New Yorkers to expect on election night. And so, you know, we'll keep working towards that goal. But you're right. Lee Zeldin, if he wins and there's supermajorities in both houses, he's effectively a talking head, because anything he vetoes, they'll override that veto, I can promise you. Whereas if we deprive them of that, we can be strong allies of his in the Senate, and we can make sure that his agenda is enacted, and we can work with him to make sure that we can block really bad things for the people of the state of New York.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that really burns me about modern politics, when I was a kid, you know, if a Democrat thought of something good and it was good for the people, the Republicans would go along with it. And likewise, if the Republicans thought of something good and it was good for the people, the Democrats would go along with it. Now it seems like, you know, you've got 2 or 3 guys in a room. You've got the leaders, and everybody follows. You know, there's very little breaking of ranks. And, you know, it's like the people are ignored, and the agendas are what's, you know, pushing everything, not necessarily representing the people that you were elected to go up there and represent.
Yeah,
I mean, so I what I will say to that is this, I say this not as a defense. I say this more as sort of I bring good news. I can tell you there are a lot of people, at least that I, certainly in our conference, there are a lot of people in Albany, and I suspect in Washington, D.C., although I don't know because I don't serve there, but there are a lot of people who are doing it for the right reasons. In other words, they're running for office, they're serving in office, to just try to do the best they can for their district, their community, their state, whatever, however you want to look at that. Invariably, the system with which they're doing it within is not always doing the same, right? The system is sort of designed to benefit certain people that feed off the system, that work the system, that, you know, and the system almost works against very often individual senators and individual legislators who are trying to do what they've been elected to do. And there are people who are both elected and unelected that benefit from that system. And I think that's really, you know, when you see, you know, the President Trump, you know, and the movement he started, I think one thing people miss in that whole election victory was that a lot of people voted for him as a sort of a screw you to the system that I was just talking about. That was at the federal level. But the idea that there's this system of government that no matter who gets in there, nothing really happens for me, the average Joe. I sort of constantly sort of get screwed, and I get the same talking points, and nothing ever changes. And so I think people are looking for someone to really stand up the system a little bit, right? We live in a very anti-establishment moment in both parties, but with that, there's a danger that, to your point, Dean, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. If it's a good idea for America, for New York, then it's a good idea. Now, I do still see those things. They do happen, but they're not the big issues, right? They're sort of, because there's a lot of issues we deal with in government that it doesn't end up on the front page of the newspaper, but it's still very important, right? It's still important to somebody, farmers, veterans, whatever it might be. And I do think there are those legislators that are able to do that. But I think we also are at a point where right now we are, the two parties are very fundamentally far apart on some issues. And so it's harder to do that. When you have one party that's talking about defunding the police,
Right.
When they take that position, it becomes harder to work with them, not just on law enforcement issues, but on a lot of issues, because now they become known as defund the police party, which means the cop in your district or the cop's wife or husband, they don't want you to work with that person at all. And so, you know, and the same can happen to Republicans. So the problem is when we take these crazy positions, when the Democrats have taken positions that are very, I view, anti-American, it makes it harder for that bipartisanship. And so hopefully we can stop that trend so that we can work together again for the betterment of the people we represent and the people who sent us there in the first place.
Yeah, we need that shifting in Albany, no doubt. So we have another email that was sent from Mike in Niagara County. Dear Senator, I saw on the news briefly yesterday that there was a 2A constitutional rights passed in Niagara County. Could you please explain a little bit more in depth about what that means? Because I do know there's a lot of people concerned about the 2A rights in New York State right now, no doubt.
As they should be, I will tell you, and I don't mean to be alarmist, but they should be. The law that I will tell anyone who's listening, the law that Governor Hochul, and it was her law. Now, this is a woman who once represented where I live and where you guys live. She represented this area in Congress. She was endorsed by the NRA. This is 2012. This isn't like 1985, right? This is like a few years ago. She was endorsed by the NRA. She sought the endorsement of the NRA. Now, why did she do that? Because she represented an area that was strongly in favor of the Second Amendment and the right to self-defense and protecting themselves in the Constitution. How fast she has shifted her position. Now, has she changed her philosophy? No way. All she's changed is now she's running for governor of New York, so she can't be pro-2A. There's no room for a pro-2A Democratic politician. If you're a Democrat out there, the Democratic Party does not support the Second Amendment in New York State, period. They do not support it. The law that she passed and that was passed by the Senate Assembly is absolutely an evisceration of the Second Amendment and the right to self-defense. That's what the Second Amendment's about. This is a pet peeve. I love sportsmen, my hunters, all those guys. They're great. And women. It's a great thing to be involved in. But I can promise you the Founding Fathers didn't draft the Second Amendment because they were concerned about hunting. The Second Amendment was drawn up to make sure that they never had a tyrannical government, but it was also drawn up so that citizens of a republic could defend and protect themselves, both from a tyrannical government or anyone else for that matter. And what this law has done is eviscerate the right to self-defense. It says you basically cannot have a concealed carry weapon, even if you have a permit for a concealed carry. You cannot take it outside your home. Now, I have no doubt this will be struck down ultimately by the Supreme Court, I suspect. I have no doubt. There is no way this is constitutional. And I say that I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I have talked to many. This will not stand. There was a ruling, as a matter of fact, a federal judge said that because it had not taken effect, the plaintiffs who brought the initial lawsuit on this law, they didn't have standing because the law hadn't taken effect. But he also said that it's clearly unconstitutional. So he was signaling to future plaintiffs that you need to file another lawsuit because this law will not hold up. And so that's the good news. But the bad news for Second Amendment folks, for folks who, you know, who own firearms, who care about the Second Amendment, is the state of New York is not going to stop until they can strip you of your right to keep and bear arms as much as they can. I will firmly stand between them and you because this is an issue that even if it cost me the election, and I can assure you in Niagara County it will not, but even if it did, I wouldn't care because I feel that strongly about it. But the resolution that the county passed at my urging is that They are calling for the repeal of this law, and I know them and the Niagara County Sheriff have essentially said that they are not going to go around patting people down looking for concealed carry weapons, that they do not support the law. So I'm very optimistic that it's not going to really be enforced in Niagara County. I want to be careful putting them on the spot for that. But the reality is it's really an unenforceable law, because if I have a weapon concealed carry, the point of that is you don't know that I have it. That's why it's concealed. That's the point. So it's just a terrible law. We could do a whole show just on that bill. Terrible law. I proudly voted no. I proudly asked the county legislature to pass that resolution. They did. Niagara County is a very pro-2A county. We had a meeting from SAFE, which is Second Amendment Forever, in Niagara County. It's the number one 2A group in Niagara County. There were 600 or more people at this meeting. It was a week ago. I couldn't believe it. I walked in. There were 600. I don't think I've ever spoken to that many people at one thing in my own Senate district in 7 years. And so I was glad to see that kind of a turnout. But there's no question, if you care about the Second Amendment, you need to get out and vote this election like your freedoms depend on it, because they absolutely do.
100%.
Well, you know, I'm first generation. My parents were in Greece during World War II, were occupied by the Germans, and they told me, you know, when the Germans first marched in, the first thing they did was they went door to door, and they knocked on the door, and they said, give me your guns, and if you said you didn't have any, they shot you right there in front of your family, because they knew that everybody had guns. A month later, they took the radios away so you wouldn't know what was going on, and then a month later, they looted, you know, they took all my grandmother's jewelry and all my mom's clothes and toys and stuff like that. Well, you know, essentially you see the same thing happening today. You know, they want to take away our guns, so we can't defend her. You know, how does it make any sense to defund the police and not give you any way to defend yourself? You know, that's crazy.
Well, correct.
Correct. You know, they
correct.
Control the media, so they don't need to steal the radios.
They're disarming law-abiding citizens, Dean, at the same time that they are making it more dangerous for law-abiding citizens to be out, because they're letting more criminals out, more dangerous criminals. Do you see gun crime is up? Do you think these gun
right.
crimes are being committed by people with pistol permits? Are you kidding me? No. It's being committed by criminals who are not following the law.
Right.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable. Unconscionable.
So real quick, because we're hitting the end of the show now, you're coming to Buffalo for some sort of fundraiser or something. Can you tell us a little about that?
So, yeah, so I actually have a fundraiser on Tuesday, the 20th. It's going to be at 500 Pearl Street, the A-Loft hotel building there. There's a beautiful rooftop bar. It's actually, to my understanding, it's the highest rooftop bar outside of New York City in the state of New York. So
pretty cool.
Great view of downtown. it's an Ellicott development building. They do, of course, all their buildings are fantastic, but it's a great building. We did it there last year, had a great turnout. The weather's supposed to be pretty decent. So, you know, certainly, I think it's 5:30 to 7:30. So for anyone who wants to attend, you're more than welcome to. We're hoping for a good night, good turnout, and it should be a fun evening.
All right, great.
All right.
Great.
And you can check out your website, your Facebook page for all of that information. We so appreciate you being on the show tonight. We have somebody that comes on at 9 o'clock. So is there any last words you'd like to leave with us?
No, just thank you guys. Thank you for what you do. Thanks for doing the show. Thanks for having me on. You know, happy to come back. There's, you know, no doubt there'll always be things to talk about. Maybe come back after the election when we can talk about a good election night for Republicans here in New York, and hopefully a different direction for the state as we go into a new year. But thank you guys for having me, and I hope you guys have a great night and a great weekend.
Thank you so much. We're heading out for tonight. D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond. To find out what our upcoming shows are, go to our Facebook page, D&D Delivering the Truth in New York State. We'll see you guys next week. Find us on Apple iPod, Freedomizer Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be sure we post it on Facebook. Have a good night, all.
Have a good weekend.